For centuries, Islam has been the dominant religion in Central Asia. But when the region was part of the USSR, the Soviets closed mosques by the thousands. They also prohibited Islamic schools and strictly limited the activities of government-sanctioned religious officials. With the independence of the Central Asian states came a new flowering of Islam and a desire to recapture Central Asia's Islamic heritage. Some saw that as a political threat, and as NPR's Mike Schuster reports, in some cases, it was.
In the center of Ashgabat, the capital of Turkmenistan, they are building what will be the largest mosque in Central Asia. After 2 years of work, the concrete and steel framework is in place, and with its four minarets and Ottoman styling, it's obvious the model is the 16th century Blue Mosque of Istanbul. The Ashgabat Mosque is a $16 million gift from the president of Turkey, and it is being built by one of Turkey's leading construction companies. Architect and site manager Cenap Toroslu says there are many close connections between the Turkish and the Turkmen people, not the least of which is language and religion.
We are coming the same origin, and they reached the liberty 5 years ago. So our president wants to give a nice building to remember every time for the each people the other ones.
Is it important to you that the construction of this mosque may stimulate the revival of Islam in Turkmenistan?
Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. They need, because they forgot before. Everybody needs to believe something.
Mosques and religious schools are opening all over Central Asia. And support for the renewal of Islam is not only coming from Turkey, whose long secular political tradition represents just one model for Islam here. With its mullahs in power and its revolutionary fundamentalism, Iran represents another. Indeed, there is something of a rivalry between Turkey and Iran for the souls of Muslims in Central Asia. In Turkmenistan, Iran's influence has more to do with business and economics than with its Shiite revolution, in the view of Michael Cotter, the U.S. ambassador in Ashgabat.
The Turkmen are, of course, Sunni Muslims, not Shia Muslims. The Turkmen don't speak Persian. The Turkmen, as a nomadic peoples historically, were never as religious as were the sedentary peoples in Central Asia. So I think the threat of that perhaps is not perceived, I think, by the Turkmen as greatly as it might be by other Central Asian countries, which have much more religious populations.
According to diplomats in Ashgabat, it is President Sapir Murad Niyazov who controls the expansion of Islam in Turkmenistan. Niyazov has financed the construction of mosques out of government funds, they say, and he has struck a deal with the clergy. Go preach God's word, we'll pay for it, but don't meddle in politics. That approach may become the Central Asian model, far more than the Iranian or Turkish way of Islam. Islam is also flourishing in Uzbekistan. In Samarkand, it is believed one of Muhammad's cousins is buried here at the Shahi Zinda, a complex of shrines built over 1,000 years. There's a story that if you count the same number of steps climbing the shrine as you do coming down, God will consider you worthy of entrance to heaven. So the little girls in their Sunday finest concentrate carefully. An elderly caretaker dressed in a long cloak and skullcap sings prayers for Uzbeks who have lost touch with their religion. The caretaker says when the Soviets ruled Uzbekistan, prayer at this shrine was not permitted.
During the time of the Soviet power, you could pray, but only in the mosques, not in these kind of places.
So it's freer now. You feel freer to pray here now.
Now it's very good because now we feel ourselves free. More free than in the days of the Soviet power.
Construction workers are also restoring the Shahi Zinda and the madrasas, or Islamic schools, in Samarkand. Stanley Escudero, the U.S. ambassador to Uzbekistan, says that the government is not hostile to Islam, as many have portrayed it.
There is not an attempt to suppress Islam in the government at present. In fact, if you consider the number of mosques and madrasas that existed in this country prior to independence, and you look at them now, you'll see that there's been an increase of several thousand in the number of mosques.
But the revival of Islam in Uzbekistan has not been free from conflict. A militant Islamic movement emerged in the early 1990s, and it was suppressed. Some of those activists are in exile, some are in jail, and at least two are dead. Ambassador Escudero acknowledges that the leaders of Uzbekistan have not found all kinds of Islamic movements to their liking.
They have seen in Afghanistan, and they have seen in Tajikistan, that Islam misdirected can indeed play a disruptive role, an energizing role, a destabilizing role in political movements. This is certainly something they want to avoid here.
As a result, it is the government, especially the remnants of the former Soviet KGB, that holds tight control over the revival of Islam in Uzbekistan. It chooses the imams who will be placed in new mosques, and according to dissident Shukrullo Mirsaidov, makes sure that what they preach conforms to government policy.
This is like the old communist system, which always needed some kind of a boogeyman. Then it was international capitalism or the threat of imperialism. Now, in order to justify its own totalitarian activities, the regime frightens the local population and the international community with the danger of Islamic fundamentalism. It's more of an exaggeration than anything real.
Mirsaidov and others doubt that any version of Islamic fundamentalism will find fertile soil in Uzbekistan. The call to prayer floats out over the center of Dushanbe, Tajikistan's capital, one rainy afternoon not long ago. It was only recently that this mosque was permitted to reopen and hold prayer services. 4 years ago, Tajikistan was torn apart by civil war, pitting the inheritors of Soviet power against a loose opposition coalition that included Islamic parties. The opposition lost and has been waging increasingly successful guerrilla warfare from neighboring Afghanistan. It is in Tajikistan that many believe the Islamic revolutionaries of Iran have their best opportunity. Tajikistan was once part of the Persian Empire, and its language, music, and culture have much in common with that of Iran. Western diplomats say Iran sent assassination teams to Tajikistan during the 1992 troubles and has been supplying the Islamic guerrillas ever since. But Saeed Mousavi, Tehran's new ambassador in Dushanbe, denies that Iran's goal is the spread of Islamic revolution.
I never accept this imagination. The version of Islam in Iran is different from the version of Islam in this region. Iran follow a real polity in this region, not ideologic polity in this region.
Few Western diplomats and local leaders, for that matter, are likely to take at face value Ambassador Mousavi's claim that Iran is pursuing a purely realistic policy in Central Asia. But it's probably fair to say that if Iran does hope to spread Islamic revolution here, it has had no clear successes so far. Despite the connections between Iran and Tajikistan, or between Turkey and Turkmenistan, no outside power has been able to dominate and direct the renewal of Islam in Central Asia. Islam is re-emerging, but the area is a complex one with its own historical and cultural identity. Most likely, its Islam will take shape in a uniquely Central Asian way. This is Mike Schuster reporting.